Welcome to Episode 9 of the Holy Bible, the New Testament, a Bible study series on the Anglican Hour. I'm Father Ron Shibley, rector of St. John Chrysostom Anglican Church, the host parish of the Anglican Internet Church. In Episode 9, we continue our discussion of miracles in the Gospel of St. Mark with the next 6 of 18 examples divided into 2 groups of 3. The first 3 examples demonstrate Jesus' power over nature. The first 2 of these take place on the Sea of Galilee, and the first is also reported in Matthew 8:23-27 and Luke 8:22-25. The second is also reported in Matthew 12:22-33 and John 6:15-21. The first event is found in chapter 4, verses 35-41, and is set on the Sea of Galilee in the evening of the day Jesus delivered the parable of the mustard seed. And Jesus sat sleeping in the stern of the largest boat in the little fleet that carried the disciples across the Sea of Galilee when a great storm blew up. The Sea of Galilee was especially prone to such violent windstorms that usually swept down the waters of the sea from the Golan Heights on its northeastern shore. The disciples, fearing the boat would sink, awoke Jesus, saying in verse 38, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" St. Mark's account is lively and dramatic, but the Western translation contains a slightly different meaning than is understood in the Eastern Church based upon the Greek text, and also as it's understood in many other translations of the Gospel of St. Mark. The New King James translation says, "He arose and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, 'Peace, be still,'" in verse 39. The Orthodox Study Bible, New Testament, and Psalms notes that the command translated as "peace" is from the same Greek word thymoe, which means "be silent" or simply "silence" that Jesus spoke to the unclean spirit at Capernaum in chapter 1, verse 25. This is not quite the same thing as peace. However, all is well as long as the reader does not interpret peace in verse 39 to be the same thing as peace in "peace to you" in John 20, verse 21 and 26, or "in me you may have peace" in John 16, verse 33. But St. Mark was not finished with his account and reports Jesus' admonition of his followers in the familiar form of a question and answer. In verse 40, "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" And St. Mark reports the disciples' thoughts, or the answer, in verse 41, "Who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him?" The second example of Jesus' power over nature is found in chapter 6, verses 45-52, and happened on the Sea of Galilee the day after Jesus had fed the 5,000. Jesus had sent the disciples across the Sea of Galilee toward the city of Bethsaida on the northeast coast while he went up to a mountain to pray. When he returned to the shore in the evening, he saw the disciples in distress during a windstorm in the middle of the sea. And St. Mark says that it was not until the fourth watch, which means it was between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m., when they were, quote, "straining at rowing," unquote, that he went out to them. And I'm going to read now the account from verses 48-52. "Now about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea and would have passed them by. And when they saw him walking on the sea, they supposed it was a ghost and cried out. For they all saw him and were troubled, but immediately he talked with them and said to them, 'Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid.' Then he went up into the boat to them, and the wind ceased. And they were greatly amazed in themselves beyond measure and marveled, for they had not understood about loaves because their hearts were hardened." There are important key words and phrases in these verses that are often overlooked, misunderstood, or incompletely or incorrectly translated. They are hardened in hearts, marveled, both in verse 52, and the phrases, "It is I," and "Do not be afraid," in verse 50. In Christian theology, hardened regarding the heart signifies that one's heart, meaning the essence of their spiritual existence or being, and not the organ that pumps blood, is not open to God. In the discussion of the fourth example of Jesus' power over sickness, in chapter 3, verses 1 through 6, the healing of the man with the withered hand, the same phrase is used in the criticism of the Pharisees. And we discussed that incident in episode 8. Hardening of the heart, as opposed to the medical term hardening of the arteries, is not a physical but a spiritual condition. It occurs when one's mind is closed to the power of the divine, or in the case of the Pharisees, when observance of ritual becomes more important than the true meaning of worship itself. In Christian baptism, the new Christian invites the Holy Spirit into the heart. This cannot happen if one's heart is hardened. The word marveled, derived from the Greek verb domazo, literally meaning to wonder at or to admire, is a New Testament phrase which is used more than 30 times, mostly in the gospel accounts. In the practice of the kind of Christian spirituality we teach here in the parish and through our Anglican Hour programs, this means that one should always be in awe of the Lord and of His power. This understanding is similar to the meaning of the Old Testament phrase, "fear of the Lord." In this immediate case, the disciples were indeed awed by the demonstrated power of Jesus over nature, and they were able to be awed because their hearts were no longer hardened. In the Greek New Testament, the phrase, "it is I," comes from the Greek ego eimi, which really should be translated as "I am," as it is in John's Gospel in the "I am" sayings of Jesus. For example, "I am the light of the world," "I am the good shepherd," "I am the way, the truth, and the life." It does not mean the literal "it is I," but instead is an assertion by Jesus that He is the same "I am" who revealed Himself to Moses at the burning bush in Exodus 3:14. To say "I am" is an assertion that He exists outside the human concept of time. In His discourse at Capernaum, Jesus said, "Before Abraham was, I am." Meaning, if we translate this by the method known as dynamic modern equivalence, we might say, "Before Abraham existed, I existed." The phrase "do not be afraid" should be taken to refer to the concept of God's peace, which He offers to all believers in Jesus Christ as the only begotten Son. When Jesus spoke to the winds in the account of the calming of the seas in 6:35-41, He says to the winds, "Peace." This is a translation issue. One of the Greek words with this meaning is selpao, which literally means silence. As I explained earlier, it does not have the same meaning as peace and should not be confused with theological peace, as in the peace of God, or as in "peace be with you." "Do not be afraid" means one should have confidence that God will provide all essential things, which is similar to the meaning of the phrase, "Give us this day our daily bread," in the Lord's Prayer, which refers to the Lord providing all things that are essential. Our third and final example of Jesus' demonstration of His power over nature is found in chapter 11, verses 12-14, and explained in 20-24. and happens near Bethany on the day after his triumphal entry into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday. This means Monday in Christian Holy Week. Jesus, hungry from his travels, saw a fig tree and hoped for fruit from it, but it had only leaves. And he said to it in verse 14, "Let no one eat fruit from you ever again." The next day, Tuesday, when the disciples were going back to Jerusalem, they passed the same fig tree. And St. Mark reports that they found it, quote, "dried up from the roots," in verse 20. It was St. Mark's mentor, St. Peter, who brought this reality to Jesus' attention. And Jesus' reply is the foundation for the prayer attributed to St. John Chrysostom, which is used at the end of Anglican morning prayer. While they were near the Mount of Olives, the reference in this reading to mountains is spiritual and not literally to the Mount of Olives. And here are verses 22b through 26. "Have faith in God, for assuredly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, 'Be removed and be cast into the sea,' does not doubt in his heart, but believes that those things he says will be done. He will have whatever he says. Therefore I say to you, whatever things you ask when you pray, believe that you receive them, and you will have them. And whenever you stand praying, if you have anything against anyone, forgive him, that your Father in heaven may also forgive you your trespasses. But if you do not forgive, neither will your Father in heaven forgive your trespasses." The next set of three examples demonstrate Jesus' power over speech and sight. The first two examples provide detail which is unique to St. Mark's Gospel. And the first example is from chapter 7, verses 31 to 37, and happened on the east side of the Sea of Galilee, where a man who was blind and deaf was brought before Jesus. The only thing like the method of healing in the Gospel happens in the second example in the same group of miracles. St. Mark writes that, quote, "Jesus put his fingers in his ears, and he spat and touched his tongue. Then, looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, 'Ephphatha,' that is, 'be open,'" in verses 33 and 34. The result, according to St. Mark, was immediate. Quote, "His ears were opened, and the impediment of his tongue was loosed, and he spoke plainly," in verse 35. Once again, Jesus commanded that none should speak of this event, but as had happened before, the word spread quickly with predictable results. They were astonished beyond measure, saying, "He has done all things well. He makes both the deaf to hear and the mute to speak," in verse 37. The word Ephphatha is Aramaic, the common language of the Holy Land at the time of Jesus, among both Jews and Gentiles. The phrase "looking up to heaven" describes the proper prayer posture for a Jew. The phrase "he has done all things well" is the source of the popular prayer "he doeth all things well," which we here at St. Chrysostom Parish use in our meal prayer before Compline. The second of three examples is found in chapter 8, verses 22 to 26, also unique to the Gospel of St. Mark, and happened at Bethsaida on the northeast coast of the Sea of Galilee during the same tour of the region in which the healing of the deaf and mute man and the feeding of the 4,000 took place. The blind man was brought to him, and Jesus took him outside the town, where he spit on the man's eyes and, quote, "put his hands on him. He asked him whether he saw anything," in verse 23. The man looked up. "I see men like trees walking," he said in verse 24. Jesus again put his hands on the man's eyes, commanding him to look up. St. Mark reports the result in verse 25b. "He was restored, and he saw everyone clearly." St. Mark provides no account of whether the man obeyed Jesus' instruction in verse 26, "neither go into the town nor tell anyone in the town." The third and final example is found in chapter 10, verses 46 to 52, and again, of course, is Jesus' power over speech and sight, and contains another especially vivid example of the manner of healing. It happened near Jericho, where Jesus encountered the blind Bartimaeus. Bartimaeus, unlike in other accounts, is further identified as the son of Timaeus in verse 46. When he is told that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he cried out in verse 47, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Son of David is an acknowledgement of Jesus as Messiah or the Christ, which is reinforced by the prayer, "Have mercy on me," a prayer offered only to God. At Jesus' command, the disciples brought Bartimaeus closer. St. Mark reports that after Bartimaeus threw aside his garment, Jesus said in verse 51, "What do you want me to do for you?" And Bartimaeus replied, granting Jesus another title, an affectionate Aramaic word for teacher or master, saying in verse 51b, "Rabboni," that I may receive my sight. Where in the case of the paralytic man at Capernaum, discussed in chapter 2, verses 1 to 12, it was the faith of the man's friends that was cited, here it was Bartimaeus' own faith. And as Jesus said to him in verse 52a, "Go your way, your faith has made you well." As was Mark's style, he writes that the man was healed immediately, also reporting that he, quote, "followed Jesus on the road," unquote, in this case toward the climactic closing events of Jesus' earthly life in the days following his triumphal entry into Jerusalem. Next time, in episode 10, we continue the discussion of miracles in the Gospel of St. Mark, with the final three examples illustrating Jesus' power over death and the two accounts of the feeding of the multitudes. Thank you for joining me in episode 9 of the Holy Bible, the New Testament. While you're on the website, I invite you to visit the digital library page for our on-demand podcast and videocast archive, the bookstore page for information about all our publications, and a link to our e-store at our Podbean site. More on that in a moment, and the Anglican Hour page, which offers links to our program archive of current and previous series. Producing these programs requires both time and money. You can support this internet ministry in two ways. And as you'll see on the screen, you can make a direct donation by sending a check in any amount payable to St. Chrysostom Church and mailing it to our business office address, 7162 Southwind Lane, Mechanicsville, Virginia, 23111. Or you can purchase books from our e-store at our Podbean site, www.stjohnc.podbean.com. Once at the Podbean site, go to the bookstore page where you can order any of our 10 publications and use PayPal. If you'd like to speak with me personally about this program or any other subject, please call on my church cell phone, 804-306-1190. If you do not reach me, please leave your name, a message, and a callback number. Again, thank you for joining me for this episode, and until next time, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make His face to shine upon you and be merciful to you. May the Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace. Amen.